This is a podcast from thebuglepodcast.com.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle sub-episode 290 Bravo. I'm Andy Zaltzman, comedian, lover, and voter. Part-time, I dabble in all of the above about once every 5 years. We're off again this week because Mr. John Oliver is busy negotiating with Ban Ki-moon, the Queen, Batman and Roger Federer on forming a super alliance to defeat all evil in the world. And I've been trying to find a missing sock. I think it might be in my underpants drawer by mistake. That's just a hunch. I'll investigate the possibility and keep you posted. But we will, or at least should, be back next week with our world-exclusive 2015 election coverage of the 2015 election here in the United Kingdom, the spiritual home of democracy, in that democracy doesn't actually live here anymore, but you can occasionally feel its ghost. So this week, instead, we have a full-on audio smorgasbord of Bugle extras, ranging from the full, unedited audio of the recent bare-knuckle dust-up between George Clooney and an escaped lamb that trampled on his picnic. I'm just hearing we do not have legal clearance to broadcast that this week, which is a shame. One punch, it was like Sugar Ray Robinson against Jake LaMotta all over again. That lamb has seriously quick hands, or hooves. Lambs have hooves? I know they come with potatoes, but I can't remember about the hooves. Anyway, ranging from that to the Bugle coverage of the morning after the last UK election in 2010, when decades of unrepresentative majority governments ended in the chaos of an impending unrepresentative coalition government. We'll also be crossing live to our marginal sports correspondent, Wall. But first, here are some little snippets of my bits from the first of the Satirists for Hire show at the Udderbelly on London's South Bank. Thanks to any of you who came, it was a hoot. Unfortunately, it was a hoot in what is basically a tent, so there is a bit of background bass music for you to enjoy from the outside bar if you listen carefully. The next show is this Thursday, the 23rd of April, coincidentally the birthday of a Mr. J. Oliver from New York City, and I know what he'd like most of all as a birthday present is for you to come and see the show on Thursday in London. It will feature me, Jeremy Hardy, Nick Doody and Joe Wells, and will be solid gold from soup to nuts. Details on the Udderbelly Festival website, and do send your emails in for the show to satirisethis@satiristforhire.com. Also, in this week's Sub-Bugle, as an extra treat, there are some random stuff I recorded off various radio stations this week as well. So, strap in, and 3, 2, 1, blast off! Is Luke Sandford here? Yes, thanks for Luke. Andy, please satirise for me the concept of the gravy train and of having your snout in the trough. Well, it's a fascinating, historically, it's a fascinating phrase, the gravy train. Do you know the origin of it? There's some dispute over it. Some say it goes back, historians will correct me if I'm wrong, some say it goes back to the early days of train travel, when George Choo Choo Stevenson, who ironically actually got his nickname before he invented the train, from his habit of chewing every piece of food 128 times before swallowing it. Which ironically actually led to him inventing the train, because all he ate was coal, and he thought there must be a better way of processing this, so, and he ended up combusting it and driving a train. Anyway, but early on, people were sceptical of trains, and so he had to think of ways to make them go on these dangerous new manifestations of the devil. So he had to tempt people on with special offers, including a voucher for your own body weight in gravy with every ticket from Manchester to Liverpool, if you turned up with a barrel to put the gravy in. But he forgot to put an expiry date on the vouchers, so there were people who just spent the rest of their lives shuttling between Manchester and Liverpool carrying barrelfuls of gravy, hence the term gravy train. Others disagree. Others claim it stems from the world's longest running legal case, Gray v. Train. Which began in 1890. I love bullshit. Began in 1894 in New York State, when a farmer named Habernacle Gray derailed a New York to Boston train on a track that ran through his land, then claimed he now owned both the train and its 132 occupants under an ancient law named Droit de Jardinier. Each passenger's case
had to be heard sequentially, and large teams of lawyers got involved on both sides. It saw the release of an average of one passenger every 7 months, partially offset by occasional births of new passengers. The case finally finished in 1989, when Gray's great-granddaughter, Habernaclette Gray III, accepted an out-of-court settlement from 101-year-old Binus Jorlick, who'd been a six-year-old boy on the original train, which he boarded with his now long-dead mother, and just wanted to get off to eat something that hadn't come off a buffet trolley before he died. So they reckon that lawyers earned an estimated $3.2 billion over the 95 years of the case, so Gravy Train became shorthand for any cushy job. Others think it actually comes from the 1930s, an alternative to the gravy boats, when dinner tables were so long that many of them had a miniaturised railway to get from one to the other. Anyway, but I digress. So Snout in the Trough, incident, that was a 1970s TV show as well. That was a cop drama about DCI Eric Snout's attempts to clean up the notorious ganglands of Tunbridge Wells, known as the T-Rough or Trough. So, anyway.
Now it's time for Teach Yourself Foreign, lesson 67.
Este el urso debe quedarse dentro del jardín.
Did the bear shit in the garden?
Nene, li urso deve quedarse dentro de los silvis.
No, the bear shat in the woods.
De certo.
Of course.
Tu mentile de fuki.
You fuckwit.
To end the culture of benefits, Mr. Cameron said, you will not teach a mouse to behave like a lion if you keep feeding it cheese. He also announced that the government will soon implement its long-term policy goal of culling the poor. It will not be the popular choice, but it is the right thing to do if we wish to remain competitive in the global race, explained the 47-year-old professional Prime Minister. The cull will begin in Stockton-on-Tees next Monday, when Mr. Cameron himself will ceremonially slay 48-year-old long-term unemployed bricklayer Kevin Platter with a bolt gun. And finally, the results from the badminton horse trials. Radiator Boy, Acrobat, Pertinax Fury and Mr. Whiskey have all been found guilty of conspiracy to murder after a stable boy was found with 12 shuttlecocks lodged in his windpipe. The horses, who deny...
Andrew Falkus. Yes or no? Shout out if you're here. Yes. Thanks. Did I pronounce your name right? No. We'll run with it. It's my gig. Now, right. Please satirise. Now, the idea when I set this show up initially was so that people could, have the issues that are really important to them, big global, national, local issues of political or social importance, satirised by me with my 15 years in showbiz experience. This is what Andrew sent in. Please satirise people who walk up to me in pub toilets, at barbecues and in parks, and once on a pedalo, although obviously they weren't walking. Thanks for that little footnote. To inform me, apropos of nothing, that ciabatta means sandal in Italian. Where are you? Hand up. Right. So, well, this raises more questions than is really comfortable. I mean, how often has this happened? A lot? Right. Right. Okay, so to me, the obvious explanation is that you are a high-level spy and you have forgotten your activation code. Were the people mostly wearing overcoats and holding themselves like this that they might have a firearm? No? Are you ciabatta fans?
Yeah.
Yeah? I'm massively against ciabattas. Huge cause in the rise of Islamic extremism for me. Let's look at the facts. The ciabatta was invented in 1982, I discovered. Thank you, Wikipedia. And Islamic extremism has got a lot worse since then. Can that be only coincidence?
Yes, absolutely. It's been all action at the Berlin Grudge Dome this week, where the 435th Annual International Resentment Simmering Championships have been taking place. The tournament, of course, has run unbroken since Henry VIII split the English bit off from the other branches of the God franchise back in 1534. That's 481 years ago, just a few years it hasn't taken place, due to nations being disgruntled with the previous year's results. So over now, live to the German capital, and our marginal sports correspondent, Wohl.
Yes, Andy, John, Tom, it's been a terrific day of gradually growing begrudgement here, building up to some caustically curt sideswipes and truly gripey grousing. And yet again, it's the reigning world champions, Ian and Michaela Strapinic of the USA, who have set the early pace in the pairs contest. The thrice divorced and remarried couple managed to find each other passively irritating throughout a marathon, 3 hours of angry glances, loaded comments, and barely audible bitching, culminating in Ian positively spitting, "Well, I know it's only paint and I don't use that room much, but I should have been consulted," to which Michaela characteristically snapped back, "Well, you're not exactly consultative Colin yourself, Ian," scoring a bonus irk when she brought up her quotes surprise weekend away, which turned out to be, of course, to Ian's favourite golfing resort, that's famously back in 2003. Michaela there demonstrating yet again why she was snapped up on a $1.5 million a year free agent contract by the Boston Grudge Harbourers after she was released by the Miami Grouse. That's the same salary Ian is still on at the Grouse, which also seemed to slightly irritate him. A mighty first day score of 17.4 by the Strapanics puts them well ahead of the British pair, twin brothers Julian and Kevin Tuke, whose feelings that each that the other was slightly favoured by their parents in childhood really starting to look a little tired at this level now against today's more personally hypersensitive resenters. But once again, the Tukes carried it off with a considerable deal of style. A late challenge put in on court three by the promising Spanish newcomers Alberto and Juchi Chireta Goycuchicoachia, who allied long-held resentment about the treatment of their native Basque country by the central Spanish government, with a strongly expressed belief that they should have received a full refund for their flight to Berlin earlier in the week, which was delayed by 5 hours, causing them to miss Wednesday's free practice session, which they have bleakly hinted has put them at a bit of a disadvantage compared to other nations' resenters, who they believe already had an inbuilt head start in any case due to the lack of funding that they have been receiving from the Spanish Simmering Resentment Association. So cutbacks in Spain there certainly helping build disgruntlement in a positive way for once. So Alan, it's all set up for a truly captivating day two, the head-to-head singles, where we can expect some more mouldering mid-level malice to keep this Berlin crowd royally entertained, or as royally entertained as a crowd can be, who thinks they've been slightly overcharged for their tickets and still have not forgiven referee Simpson Grievel for disqualifying hometown favourite Schitt Eichelquist in last year's final, when his grievance about not being granted permission to build a shed in his neighbour's garden was judged to have spilt over into both unreasonability and outright complaint from IRSC 435 here in the Grudge Dome. Back to you in the studio.
Thank you, Wohl. Now, as I speak, Britain is preparing itself for the elderly grandmother of elections, increasingly indecisive, hard to understand and prone to confusion. It looks like we could be set for another 5 years of coalition as voters seem unsure of which party to vote for and of which leader they're most prepared to allow themselves to be lectured by, irritated at and disillusioned with until 2020. We'll have plenty more on this next week, but let's go back now to where the coalition era all began, election night 2010. Or, well, in fact, the day after election night 2010, when we recorded the first post-election night bugle in the history of British democracy.
Top story this week, anarchy for the UK. It's coming sometime and maybe I give a wrong time, stop a traffic line. Your future dream is a shopping scheme, cause I wanna be anarchy.
You've been waiting a long time to get that one out of your bag, John.
Yeah, I felt better out than in.
That was your rescue club.
Well... Well, Andy, you woke up in a different Britain than the one you fell asleep in. You're like Dorothy waking up and realising that she's actually still in Kansas, it's just that Kansas has swung frighteningly far to the right. That's not a scarecrow, Dorothy. That's a homeless man who now has no welfare state to help him. Now click your heels together three times and say, I wish I'd voted yesterday. So, what is the atmosphere over there, Andy?
Well, John, just total panic, as I suggested at the top of the show. We just, you know, we're just waiting for someone to take control of this country. I'm sure our Bugle listeners know, it was a hung parliament yesterday's elections. We're recording on Friday at the moment. It's still all up in the air. As we're recording, David Cameron is making a speech in which I believe he's declaring that he has the Queen hostage in the boot of his car and he's going to kill her unless we let him be Prime Minister.
Well, Britain is currently without a government, Buglers, and I actually think this is really a huge opportunity, a big chance for the Queen. If she drives around today, Andy, firing a machine gun into the air, I think she could have the dictatorship that I know she's been dreaming about since she was 12.
Yep. Interesting that actually that this should have fallen on Bugle 114, because 114 is the number of times David Cameron has had practiced his off-the-cuff acceptance speech. He's now having to hastily rewrite. Also the number of times Gordon Brown has dreamt he was born 100 years earlier and in Russia. Ironically, interesting, also the A114 in Germany is a road leading to central Berlin. And with a hung parliament, the right-wing press have been telling us that we might as well have let Hitler win, take over and divert the British A114 in northeast London straight to the Reichstag. So it's kind of amazing, because the Labour Party lost the election, the Conservatives also lost the election, and the Liberal Democrats, well, they lost the election really quite badly.
They really lost the election.
And the assorted Celts and nutcases, they've also lost the election. So now with everyone having lost the election, we're now down to a squabble about who has lost it the least. And the Conservatives had the most votes and seats, but they don't. There's this argument over who has the mandate. The government clearly ended up with under 30% of the vote from a 65% turnout, 255 seats. They need 326 for an overall majority. The Tories on 302 as we speak. Cameron is now saying, this is breaking news on the Bugle, Cameron is now saying he does subscribe to the Bugle but hasn't listened to it for a few weeks because he's been busy. That's now flat. That's come through from Reuters.
Wow.
But he's saying he's going to try and form a minority government and talk to the other parties. Now, I mean, this could be a momentous day for British politics, Sean. This could be the day that British politics grows the up.
I think, Andy, the problem there is that you're presupposing an engaged electorate and politicians with the capacity for shame, and that's ludicrous.
But, I mean, yesterday was an incredible day. It was awesome going to vote. You know, I love the smell of democracy in the morning.
Yeah.
Surprisingly similar to a dairy farm, in fact, in the morning, the smell of British democracy. Also sounds quite like one, too, and has a lot of people milking it for all they can, and an unholy mess is inevitably left behind. It's truly uncanny, John. But there is, as you know, nothing better in this life than writing the letter X in a box next to the name of someone you've never heard of.
Yep.
That is what democracy is all about, John.
So, no government as it stands. But to be honest, Andy, I don't think this result has particularly surprised anyone. Gordon Brown actually released a statement saying that he would take full responsibility for the election defeat a day before the polls even opened. I'm not questioning his facts there, Andy. I'm just questioning his timing. He is a regular Henry V, that man, isn't he? Men, gather round. I just want you troops to know that when Agincourt is a total catastrophe, I mean a complete massacre, that it is on me. Okay? My bad. I think that's it. Once more into the breach to your certain deaths, everybody. Let's get this thing over with.
Well, it's like Churchill in the first draft of his famous We Will Fight Them on the Beaches, We Will Fight Them in the Hills little skit. Quite different, because he wasn't very confident. And he said, we will fight them on the beaches, we will fight them in the hills, but frankly, I don't really fancy our chances. The Germans are looking pretty strong at the moment. And to be honest, they probably deserve to win. They've certainly been the better team over the course of the war so far, and we can have no complaints, really. So best of luck to Adolf and his team. They've thoroughly merited this victory. But luckily, someone got to him and said, right, come on, come out fighting, big win. And he did. But we've had a touch of excitement in this democracy, that a number of postal votes have gone missing, and we've ended up with hundreds of people being locked out as the polls closed at 10 o'clock last night because there were huge queues because I think people had committed the mistake of living in a massively incompetently run area.
Right. And so
there was genuine sort of... It almost looked like it was about to break down into violence. We had a real touch of the sort of Afghan election experience. So it was, nice. And we're kind of sharing democracy around the world and it's showed that it's give and take, really. But the people of Britain have spoken, John. They spoke with one voice, and what they said was...
Now all three parties start jockeying for alliances like they're on a jungle reality show all about to eat a jar of cockroaches. And in fact, that process might have even more dignity than the one they're about to embark on. It's also three people competing for a job that if any one of them stopped to think about it for a second, would realise they might not actually want. Britain's budget deficit is set to be even bigger than Greece's this year, and they are on the verge of a bankrupt anarchy. This might actually turn into an argument of, you have it. No, you have it. Oh, well, come on, you won most seats. It's yours. Oh, I won't hear it, Prime Minister. Please don't call me that.
Yeah, because usually elections you get people coming out and claiming victory, but I think they looked at the economy and basically everyone was saying, no, it's not looking good, and just desperately trying to claim defeat. And I think Cameron's failure to win this election outright must go down as one of the most spectacular electoral bloopers in our history. As Labour, John, was staring down the barrel, but more than that, they had pointed the barrel at their own face and written a note saying sorry to everyone they'd let down, and then placed the Conservatives' finger on the trigger. So quite how it went wrong is frankly baffling, particularly when they had a huge support from the press, the Conservatives, and this sort of fed into the anti-Lib Dem swing, I think, in the last few days, the worries about the hung parliaments. A lot of the newspapers had said these concerns that were vomited out by the Tory press onto the nation's cornflakes about how basically, looking at Greece now, it's basically a computer simulation of what Britain will be like if there's a hung parliament, just flames, riots, 100,000 years of British civilisation conflagrated in one fell swoop of electoral indecision, and about how if there's a hung parliament, it would probably vote to ban all medical advances made since 1785 and make all women wear concrete burkas. So, I mean, that was the level of scaremongering going on. And the Conservatives, if they do form the government, which now seems likely a minority government, they will be the least popular incoming government since the 1920s. But I think that these low expectations could really help, John, because people have had enough of being let down by their politicians. They're sick to death of it, quite literally in some cases, due to NHS underfunding. But you can only let people down if they expect you to be any good in the first place. And the way this election has gone shows that people don't expect anyone to be any good anymore, and expectations will be so low that all the Conservatives will need to do is stop the Queen being kidnapped by the Chinese and everyone will think they've done better than expected. So this could actually work for them. And everyone lived happily ever after. And now for a bit more from the Satirist for Hire show on Thursday, plus some more nonsense off the radio.
And that's how you turn a sausage back into a live pig.
Thank you, Rabbi, and next time we'll be looking at...
He's flatly denied it, I understand, Wilbur.
Yes, Alan, Buckingham Palace is insisting there is absolutely no truth whatsoever in media reports that a routine spiritual checkup has revealed that the one-year-old Prince George is a fundamentalist Muslim. A palace source had been quoted in an exclusive undercover report in this week's Moshi Monsters magazine as saying these things do not always go directly through the parental genes, and word from within the palace is that they've got the Archbishop of Canterbury playing with Prince George in a ball pit for 12 hours a day to try to make him Osmo's Anglicanism.
And, Wilbur, importantly, does this affect the quality of George's printing?
No, Alan, of course, he's an absolute natural at it. Still shits perfume and cries champagne.
Thank you, Wilbur Spatz there, the news editor from BBC George 24. That's the new Freeview channel, dedicated exclusively to round-the-clock coverage of the Royal Prince right up until his coronation in 70 to 80 years' time. The latest from the previously unreported Anglo-Portuguese War now, and as the Portuguese Navy continues its heavy bombardment of Southampton, the British Defence Secretary, Michael Fallon, has urged the people of Hampshire to, quote, get used to the taste of custard tarts.
Simon Dias. I'm hoping to be here with my girlfriend. Did she... Right. So is this a date? Right. You do realise that bringing someone to see one of my gigs on a date is tantamount to saying this relationship has gone as far as it can possibly go. My girlfriend is an Arsenal supporter, and if a club needs satirising more than them, I don't know it. So, I don't. Do you think? I mean, they're explicitly militaristic. They're very hawkish. Arsenal with the cannon. Yeah. Just the name. They were founded as a military football. They were founded in 1886. Just 13 years later, the Boer War began. They moved to Highbury in 1913. 1 year later, the world descends into its worst ever conflict. They dominated English football in the 1930s with 5 league titles and 2 FA Cups, prompting the rise of Nazism. It's an evil fucking club. Arsene Wenger. What an awful man. Does he care about the world at all? I mean, he had a press conference this morning. Did he mention the Syrian crisis? Not once did he touch on Ukraine or Iraq or Libya. Fucking nothing. The environment, not interested. There's an election coming up. Did he touch on the issues of social division in Britain today? No, he was more interested in Jack Wilshere's injury. He's an appalling, truly appalling man. Let's look at why he might be this man. Born October 1949, therefore conceived January 1949. Around about the time that the Council for Mutual Economic Assistance was established by the Soviet Union and other communist nations to oppress the people of Eastern Europe. About the time that the forces from the Communist Party of China entered Beijing and started a reign of cultural oppression. And possibly on the exact day of the death of the French motor racing driver and wartime resistance hero, Jean-Pierre Wimille, who died in practice for the 1949 Buenos Aires Grand Prix. So not only is he an awful man himself, but his parents were fucking perverts.
So now, to win that candlelit hog roast for two, can you tell me, what were Eva Braun's last words?
Worst honeymoon ever?
Correct, Peter, you are today's winner! Of course, 2 feelings of profound guilt and a lengthy period of incarceration, so all in all, I'm afraid not a very good week for Sagittariuses.
Thank you, Brenda, and the Real Horoscope Show returns at the same time next week. And now it is time for the 5 o'clock news.
Fuck, 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 can't!
Which idiot forgot to bleep out the time squares?
This is the news. I am Pertwin Range. The UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon has warned that any solution to the Ukraine crisis will be like an overweight, arthritic and spiritually committed nun, neither quick nor easy. NATO countries have pledged to donate land to Ukraine to compensate for the loss of the Crimea region. Italy has contributed a little bit of Tuscany with a pretty village in it. The United Kingdom has agreed to give the northern coast of Norfolk, including Cromer, the alleged holiday resort, whilst the USA is donating the Canadian province of Nova Scotia. Showbiz news now. The soap opera actress and pop singer Michelle Poltroon has pulled out of the reality TV series Look At Me Doing Something I Don't Usually Do, as she takes time out to come to terms with the realization that life is a vale of tears and we will all die alone. Miss Poltroon, who made...
Tim O'Connor. Is there a Tim O'Connor here? Shout out if you're here. Yes? That's not shouting out. satirised the complete general election as if a horse racing commentator were to commentate on it. I'm not really very good at impressions, but I'll do my best now. This is a horse racing commentator commentating on the general election. And they're off. And it's a 3-week campaign. I'm sure some things are going to be discussed. I'm really, really out of my comfort zone here. I'm a horse racing commentator. Politics just isn't really my thing. I vote, but I prefer horses and racing. And when the two are... Look, that's really what I'm about, horse racing. I've just got nothing really meaningful to say on what's going on. I don't really understand the issues, and I find the bickering a bit interminable, but I do find it interesting that the celebrity racehorse Frankel's testicles are worth more than Northern England. Other than that, I have nothing to say. How was that? Luke Sanford, who asked about the gravy train, you also asked about going to comedy gigs on your own. Where was Luke again? All right. So you're here on your own? So I've been to comedy gigs on my own when I have been the act. So, well, I think more people should do more things on their own. Almost all of humanity's problems have been caused by people meeting and talking to each other. So, yeah. Almost. Oh, Matthew Bennett. Is Matthew Bennett here? Shout out if you're here.
Yes.
Yes. Hello, Matthew. Andy, would you be so kind as to satirise the bejesus out of lampshades and lampshade making? God said, let there be light. He did not say, let there be light. Hang on, that's a bit too much. Let's surround it with some beige fabric. So anyone who uses a lampshade or sympathises with lampshade use is defying the will of the Lord and should be struck down.
So that's it for this week. Don't forget to come to my shows at the Udderbelly this Thursday, the 23rd of April, and election night, the 7th of May. I'm also back at the Soho Theatre on a monthly basis, starting on the 11th of May. And do send your emails in for those shows to satirisethis@satiristforhire.com. Keep your Bugle emails coming in to info@thebuglepodcast.com, and don't forget to have a look at our SoundCloud page, or even better, listen to some stuff on it at soundcloud.com/the-bugle. We'll be back next week with Bugle 291, which will probably be the decisive factor in the forthcoming election, plus an update on our charity appeal. Until then, Buglers, goodbye. The music in this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, and what an absolutely marvellous effort from him that was.